I switched on the light and looked at the floor by the bed. Whatever I had stepped on was gone. I tapped on Jim's door. "What?" he said. "How does a snake feel? Sort of rough, cold, dusty. Why?" "I think there's one under my bed. Can you come look?" "Are you being funny?" Jim opened the door. He was in his pajama bottoms. I noticed not without satisfaction that the mark of my knuckles was still on his mouth. When he saw I meant what I said, he said, "If you think I'm going to put my face down to a snake, you got another think coming. Hold on a minute." He went to the kitchen and fetched the broom. "You better get up on the bed," he said. "You reckon it's really one?" I asked. This was an occasion. Our houses had no cellars. They were built on stone blocks a few feet above the ground, and the entry of reptiles was not unknown, but was not commonplace. Miss Rachel Haverford's excuse for a glass of neat whiskey every morning was that she never got over the fright of finding a rattler coiled in her bedroom closet on her washing when she went to hang up her negligee. Jim made a tentative swipe under the bed. I looked over the foot to see if a snake would come out. None did. Jim made a deeper swipe. "The snake's grunt?" "It ain't a snake," Jim said. "It's somebody." Suddenly, a filthy brown package shot from under the bed. Jim raised the broom and missed Dill's head by an inch when it appeared. "God Almighty!" Jim's voice was reverent. We watched Dill emerge by degrees. He was a tight fit. He stood up and eased his shoulders, turned his feet in their ankle sockets, rubbed the back of his neck. His circulation restored, he said, "Hey." Jim petitioned God again. I was speechless. "I'm about to perish," said Dill. "Got anything to eat?" In a dream, I went to the kitchen. I brought him back some milk and half a pan of cornbread left over from supper. Dill devoured it, chewing with his front teeth, as was his custom. I finally found my voice. "How'd you get here?" "By an involved route." Refreshed by food, Dill recited this narrative. Having been bound in chains and left to die in the basement, there were basements in Meridian, by his new father, who disliked him, and secretly kept alive on raw field peas by a passing farmer who heard his cries for help, the good man poked a bushel, pod by pod, through the ventilator. Dill worked himself free by pulling the chains from the wall. Still in wrist manacles, he wandered 2 miles out of Meridian, where he discovered a small animal show and was immediately engaged to wash the camel. He traveled with the show all over Mississippi until his infallible sense of direction told him he was in Abbott County, Alabama, just across the river from Macomb. He walked the rest of the way. "How'd you get here?" asked Jim. He had taken $13 from his mother's purse, caught the 9 o'clock from Meridian, and got off at Macomb Junction. He had walked 10 or 11 of the 14 miles to Macomb, off the highway in the scrub bushes, lest the authorities be seeking him, and had ridden the remainder of the way, clinging to the backboard of a cotton wagon. He had been under the bed for 2 hours, he thought. He had heard us in the dining room, and the clink of forks on plates nearly drove him crazy. He thought Jim and I would never go to bed. He had considered emerging and helping me beat Jim, as Jim had grown far taller. But he knew Mr. Finch would break it up soon, so he thought it best to stay where he was. He was worn out, dirty beyond belief, and home. "They must not know you're here," said Jim. "We'd know if they were looking for you." "Think they're still searching all the picture shows in Meridian," Dill grinned. "You ought to let your mother know where you are," said Jim. "You ought to let her know you're here." Dill's eyes flickered at Jim, and Jim looked at the floor. Then he rose and broke the remaining code of our childhood. He went out of the room and down the hall. Atticus? His voice was distant. Can you come here a minute, sir? Beneath its sweat-streaked dirt, Dill's face went white. I felt sick. Atticus was in the doorway. He came to the middle of the room and stood with his hands in his pockets, looking down at Dill. I finally found my voice. It's okay, Dill. When he wants you to know something, he tells you. Dill looked at me. I mean, it's all right, I said. You know he wouldn't bother you. You know you ain't scared of Atticus.
I'm not scared, Dill muttered. Just hungry, I'll bet.
Atticus's voice had its usual pleasant dryness. Scout, we can do better than a pan of cold cornbread, can't we? You fill this fella up, and when I get back, we'll see what we can see. Mr. Finch, don't call Aunt Rachel. Don't make me go back. Please, sir. I'll run off again.
Whoa, son, said Atticus. Nobody's about to make you go anywhere but to bed pretty soon. I'm just over to tell Miss Rachel you're here and ask her if you could spend the night with us. You'd like that, wouldn't you? And for goodness sake, put some of the county back where it belongs. The soil erosion's bad enough as it is.
Dill stared at my father's retreating figure. He's trying to be funny, I said. He means take a bath. See there? I told you he wouldn't bother you. Jim was standing in a corner of the room, looking like the traitor he was. Dill, I had to tell him, he said. You can't run 300 miles off without your mother knowing. We left him without a word. Dill ate and ate and ate. He hadn't eaten since last night. He used all his money for a ticket, boarded the train as he had done many times, coolly chatted with the conductor, to whom Dill was a familiar sight. But he had not the nerve to invoke the rule on small children traveling a distance alone. If you've lost your money, the conductor will lend you enough for dinner, and your father will pay him back at the end of the line. Dill made his way through the leftovers and was reaching for a can of pork and beans in the pantry when Miss Rachel's "Dude Jesus" went off in the hall. He shivered like a rabbit. He bore with fortitude her "Wait till I get you home. Your folks are out of their minds worrying." Was quite calm during "That's all the Harrison you coming out." Smiled at her, "Reckon you can stay one night," and returned the hug at long last bestowed upon him. Atticus pushed up his glasses and rubbed his face. "Your father's tired," said Aunt Alexandra, her first words in hours, it seemed. She had been there, but I suppose struck dumb most of the time. "You children get to bed now." We left them in the dining room, Atticus still mopping his face. "From rape to riot to runaways," we heard him chuckle. "I wonder what the next 2 hours will bring." Since things appear to have worked out pretty well, Dill and I decided to be civil to Jim. Besides, Dill had to sleep with him, so we might as well speak to him. I put on my pajamas, read for a while, and found myself suddenly unable to keep my eyes open. Dill and Jim were quiet. When I turned off my reading lamp, there was no strip of light under the door to Jim's room.